on that and see what it brings. I would have liked to have looked at it a little earlier, but anyway, he did talk to me about it on the phone. And the gist of it is, of these articles, is that there's some new media outlets, and you might think, oh boy, grassroots citizen journalism popping up, and but you know, all of that kind of thing costs lots of money. But anyway, it says here, and the gist of it again is that these new outlets are part of this big corporate shell schemes where they may be owned by 20 different companies. I mean, it's ridiculous. He says you can. It's very difficult to find out who really owns these new media outlets, and so you find, well, oh, here it is. It's on. Nope, they're owned by a parent company that's something else, and then that parent company is owned by another parent company, and it may look like a local, even a local outlet, but it could be owned by somebody in Japan or China, or it's crazy what the and what I'm beginning to think about this, which is not a great mental stretch, is that these big corporations are simply selling. They're like hired, I call them hired tongue slingers. They are selling influence because they have enough money to develop these media outlets. And then they look local, but they're global. They're owned by these big conglomerates. And so I think that's going to be the gist of it. I'll read the first paragraph of this. It says, the old adage that sticks and stones can break bones, quote, but words will never hurt me, unquote, may hold true in a school playground spat. But if that playground is the world at large and serious issues are at stake, then it's a different matter altogether. Yeah, okay, well, words can hurt you. Exactly. And they can deceive you and get you to do bad things, or get you in a position where bad things happen to you. Okay, he goes on here. Indeed, if those words mislead, malign, misinform, or otherwise deceive people and put them on the road to perdition, and if the words emanate from a financial commercial majority, oh, I'm sorry, minority, that's plutocratic and oligarchic, and if the participants from CEO to field grunt are all of one mind, producing one fundamental message based on a typical covert agenda, then words quickly become weaponized and morph into the most deadly thing in the world. Wow, I think that's a fantastic paragraph. I think it's one sentence too. That's a one sentence paragraph, but it's very accurate. Okay, it's an accurate description. So going on here, that's especially true of words that dehumanize a particular population and declare them to be non-persons, ripe for the plucking according to whatever scheme is in motion. Okay, now he has here a heading that says, a news cartel. Very good. Now, continue reading. At this time in history, the source of such one-world narrative, behind which a thus far officially unacknowledged elite agenda lurks, is what's generally known as the mainstream media, sometimes referred to as the, quote, legacy media, unquote. Truth be told, however, it's best described as the mass media cartel. And I agree with that. And both Mark and I have just got into the habit of using that because that's why mess around with these people? Why give these, why give this cartel an easy and benign name when it deserves a dangerous and diabolical name, and that's it. Mass media cartel. That's what we're dealing with. They fix the news. They don't fix prices. They fix the news. They create one news. And that is super dangerous. Are you with us, Mark?
Yes, sir.
When did you just now get on?
Just this very moment.
Very good. Very good. Well, I've been reading your article to the audience, and I've got down here to a news cartel and read the first paragraph of that. This is a very good article, Mark. I like it a lot.
I appreciate that. I'm working on the second installment for UKcolumn.org, and it's incredible. And hello to the audience out there for Stop the Presses today, being the 20th of March. Now we're into spring 2024. Welcome live and the archive. Thanks for checking in. And yeah, Ron, I appreciate you starting with that. Working on the second installment, I'm just completely taken aback by the plutocracy that's involved with the media cartel. There is not a chance in their reinvention of themselves in anything they put out there that they try and make look like it's new or fresh or novel, or like they're really going to entertain a genuinely wide range of views and let everything in and don't censor. There's just not a chance that that's going to happen, because everything leads to the top, even if they try and make it look like it's a new grassroots exciting thing. And right. in the second installment, and not knowing exactly how far you got into it, but on the second installment, we have, and this is a little preview of coming attractions, we have the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation. The first article was a little bit more American-oriented, the one you've been reading. This one's a little more British-oriented. Well, the BBC, which makes everyone in Britain pay a tax to support the BBC, they're taking the tax money and creating the Local Democracy Reporting Service. And what that means, and the British Journalism Review, to its credit, the British Journalism Review did a somewhat skeptical, critical look at the LDRS, we'll call it for short, Local Democracy Reporting Service. Basically, they take the public's tax dollars, the fee, the TV fee that they pay to support the BBC, and they have the same argument as in the first article that you've been reading today. That argument is that newspapers are failing, local weeklies and local dailies are going belly up or very close to it. Some of your local broadcast media, radio, etc., is not making it. It's creating a news dearth, a news desert, a drought of news. Oh my God, what are we going to do? We have to fill the void. So then the BBC says, we'll fill the void by taking the tax money that funds the BBC, and we'll spend £8 million a year, which is about $10 million, maybe $12 million, and we'll train and pay salaries to mostly young reporters, and we'll station them in existing newspapers that are still making it, and the ones that haven't went belly up, and thereby give them a more vibrant, more dynamic news product, and then try and save those papers from going under. And at the same time, they'll cover the local councils and the regional councils that they say are not getting the news coverage they need. That's why they say local democracy. And then, ergo, they believe the additional watchdog coverage, supposedly, of the local governmental councils, they believe that'll attract more readers because they're filling a news void. They're trying to cancel the drought. they're bringing in rain and sunshine to cancel out this drought, metaphorically speaking. And so then even those papers that don't have a BBC local democracy reporter paid to be operating in their building, they'll also share those stories with those papers that don't actually have an in-house reporter in this program. You follow me?
So they
assign this army of local young reporters, put them in papers that are teetering on the edge of bankruptcy, and even some that are doing okay. That the day by day editorial direction will come from those papers, but the BBC pays the salaries of those reporters so as not to burden the local papers with too much extra overhead. But a couple of the problems are, the British Journalism Review has pointed out that the local papers are taking the money that's allotted to them to pay those reporters, the money from the BBC, and they're reducing the pay of these new reporters and putting more of the money into the bottom line. And they're not supposed to do that. They're supposed to use virtually all of it to pay these new reporters that are stationed locally. But again, other papers that don't have a local reporter station with them paid by the BBC will still get these reports on local councils, on local government. And then they believe then they're filling the news void, the news desert, the news drought. They believe that'll be taken care of and all will be well. But here's the thing. Virtually all the papers in the UK are owned by just three companies.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a cartel.
Yes.
It is a cartel. And
it sounds like one cartel is paying the other cartel now.
It is. The BBC being the tax supported official government voice monopoly is paying reporters, and most of those reporters are stationed in newspapers that belong to one of three companies, one of which has major American connections, which is Gannett, and then there's two others. So there's no way around it. It's an additional monopolization of media influence under the guise of filling local voids where they believe coverage is non-existent or almost non-existent, with like covering local councils. So if I'm one of those local democracy reporting service reporters, chances are I'm going to be stationed at a newspaper that belongs to one of three companies. And those companies are Reach PLC, National World, formerly known as JPI Media, and NewsQuest Media Group, which is owned by the American company Gannett, which is well known for publishing USA Today. And so this is huge. And what the British Media Journal, the British Journalism, journal, what they had to say was, quote, well before the lockdown, the big three regional groups, Reach PLC, JPI Media, now National World, and NewsQuest, were engaged in a strategy of ruthless retrenchment. The trio, which together published more than three quarters of the UK's newspapers, had been closing titles, they had been hollowing out local newsrooms, and making journalists redundant. The obvious result was a worrying democratic deficit, an information vacuum, in which there was inadequate scrutiny for local government. So the three big media companies that are getting this money and these reporters that are supposed to be paid by that money, they were already intentionally shutting down redundant news outlets and creating the very news void that the tax dollars of the British people is now filling.
That's bizarre. And the first bizarre thing is that there's a government is taxing the people for news. I mean, to me, that just means that's government news. I mean, if the funds go to government, then it's government. So this is this is just, I mean, the church could barely get away with that. I mean, could we have a state church and everybody donates to the one state church? And now they have a new service that the whole nation contributes tax dollars to. That, talk about not democratic. Talk about tyrannical. There's no authority to do stuff like that.
Well, in a where you have a monarchy, and not that all monarchies in history were bad. There were good ones and there were bad ones. There were honorable ones, and there were dishonorable ones. But this is basically state media, just like the Anglican Church is state church in the UK.
Yeah.
So these three private companies don't have anything to worry about with tax dollars coming their way to pay these reporters to be stationed in newspapers that will be owned by one of these three companies. Again, these three companies own 3/4 of the nation's local newspapers, and NewsQuest, the one that's connected to the American company Gannett, owns a whole slew of papers on this side of the pond.
Wow.
And, yeah, and so you have a extremely collusive, monopolistic process going on. The taxpayers' only contribution is money. They have no other input, no power. They are rendered absolutely powerless in this scheme.
Yeah, taxation without representation. So they're paying a news service, and they have no power over the types of news, the types of... we have a break coming.
Yes, we do. We'll be right back with more on this and the border.
Smile, such platonic eye, how they drown in incomplete capacity. Strangers thought them old when the fear it calls, how we drown in stylistic audacity. Charge the common ground.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First are right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next are beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames, eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Yeah, from the little big horn to the Rio Grande, it seems we've seen the last that we need stand. Well, all the flea markets and the paper routes, if you can't trade in bulk, you get muscled out. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Stop the Presses. It's the 20th of March. Happy new spring here. Your host, Mark Anderson, and I'm with Ron Avery. And we're talking about the mass media cartel, some very specific aspects of it, particularly a new program, relatively new in Britain. And we're going to be getting into the border a bit. As many of us have heard, Senate Bill 4, a Texas state bill, it was stayed on March 4, and on March 12th, the Supreme Court of the United States extended the stay until this past Monday, and then I've heard mixed reports. I've heard that the stay was extended again, meaning there's a hold on enforcing the bill, a border bill, and then I've heard kind of contrary to that. There's a little bit of confusion out there, but with a media like we have today, what else could you expect but chaos, confusion, and putting us all on the road to perdition. But Ron, just to continue a little more with the media after the bottom of the hour and station ID, we'll go a little further with the media stuff, switch to the border, and certainly accept some phone calls on that. We'd like to hear people, what they have to say, their opinions, what they're hearing. Maybe we can clear up some of the confusion out there on Senate Bill 4. But Ron, to get into a little bit of the details. Now, when you consider that those three companies own the bulk of the papers in the UK, 75% or more, and that according to the British Journalism Journal, according to the British Media Journal, those papers within those three companies are going to get the bulk of these local democracy reporters paid for by British taxpayers, and other papers that may be owned by those three, and certainly some of those few that are not owned by those big three companies, they'll get some of the reports anyway, even if they don't have those local reporters stationed at their offices. When you get into not only how much media those three companies own, Ron, in the UK, but you get into the details of the companies themselves, it is really just absolutely flabbergasting. Just for example, Reach PLC consists of leading media brands. Excuse me. These are very familiar papers in the UK: The Mirror, Express, Daily Record, Daily Star, and there's some local brands. These are magazines or newspapers: My London, Belfast Live, the Manchester Evening News, the Liverpool Echo, the Irish Star, and Wales Online. So you'll notice it covers a wide geographical area. Belfast is Northern Ireland. Liverpool is roughly South Central England. Irish Star is in Ireland. Wales is in Western UK, covering a broad geographical area. But that just gets started. JPI Media is now National World, and it's launched 16 new titles and made 7 further acquisitions, including flagship newspapers like The Scotsman up in Scotland, The Yorkshire Post, and so on and so forth. That company, JPI Media, now National World, had 2022 revenues, that's 2 years ago, revenues of $84.1 million. And the NewsQuest Media Group, in the UK has 250 plus local news brands and magazines claiming to have 41 million digital users per month, et cetera, et cetera. And here's where it gets interesting, Ron. NewsQuest was formed in 1996 as a management buyout of Reed, R-E-E-D, regional newspapers with backing, financial backing from the U.S. private equity company Kohlberg, Kravis, Roberts & Company, KKR. Drum roll, please. The chairman of KKR, Henry Kravis, and his wife, Marie, are fixtures, longtime fixtures at the Bilderberg meetings.
Yeah.
Marie being the current head of the American Friends of Bilderberg, which is a charity registered in New York that raises funds and gives direction to the American wing of Bilderberg. Of course, those are those highly secretive annual meetings that are basically a steering committee comprised of the top brass from various public and private power sectors. So right away, the background of one of the three companies, and it's the largest of those big three, NewsQuest, the background already leads us to the doorstep of Bilderberg, Rod.
Yes. That's amazing. What's the chance of getting any real news over that stuff?
Zero.
Approximately, in your article, it says approximately zero. That's right.
Yeah, well, see, the thing is nowhere, and I could go on citing many more connections. I'll cite a few more after the bottom of the hour, but nowhere do you see anything that's truly grassroots. The only thing grassroots is the tax money taken from the taxpayer.
Yep, here comes a break, Mark.
Yep, see you on the other side. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org, T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org. And welcome to the second half of Stop the Presses here on the 20th of March, 2024. Spring is upon us. Spring has sprung, you might say, Ron. And to go a little further with the media thing, we got to put a cherry on top of this sundae with a little whipped cream here. We're having too much fun. And then we'll talk about the border and take any calls that someone might want to make to the station. And we'd love to talk about the border, mainly what you're hearing, what you think. Is Abbott going to enforce SB4 once the courts get out of his way? But is SB4 even necessary? That's the real hang up here. The existing military and law enforcement and legal and constitutional infrastructure is there and has been there a very long time to take care of any border matters, up to and including the kind of issues we're seeing today. So that's a deeper question. But anyway, to put that cherry on top of the sundae here of the mass media cartel, this newest analysis that I'm doing, of those three that I named, Ron, the big three that I named, there is no doubt that the deepest roots are with NewsQuest. It has the deepest roots of those big three. And we have to go a little further down the rabbit hole, but I mentioned that NewsQuest was owned by the American company Gannett. So that's the one company of the three that straddles the Atlantic Ocean and has significant media holdings on both sides. But if you think that Gannett owning NewsQuest is the end of the story, you'd be wrong. Gannett itself has a parent, and that parent company is the New Media Investment Group. Now, there's a watchdog website known as Influence Watch, a pretty decent website. It describes the New Media Investment Group as follows: a New York City-based private equity firm that's the parent company of Gannett, and Gannett, in turn, owns NewsQuest. NewsQuest, in turn, is one of the big three that owns 75% of the UK newspapers. And that parent company, New Media Investment Group being the parent company of Gannett, is another connection. And Gannett Incorporated itself is the largest newspaper publisher in the United States. So big UK holdings. And now we have the largest newspaper publisher in the U.S., Ron, connected to this octopus that we're talking about.
Wow.
But it doesn't stop there. Wouldn't you like to think that it does? A quick note, New Media Investment Group, which owns Gannett, and Gannett in turn owns NewsQuest, that group oversees the operation and publishing of 260 daily newspapers and 300 weekly publications in 47 U.S. states and in Guam, and administers over 130,000 business advertising accounts with a supposed weekly reach of over 12 million people. You can't always believe their numbers, but that's what they say. I'm reading from some of my notes for my second article, following up on the one you read, Ram. Note that Gannett is the top dog in U.S. publication, yet its NewsQuest affiliate has a strong U.K. presence. Thus, we're looking, as I said, at a major ocean-straddling mass media cartel entity. But to take this matter even further, note that New Media Investment Group, big though it may be, is still not the top of the pyramid. To determine that dubious honor, the financial website Reuters noted the following. The New Media Investment Group is run by the Fortress Investment Group. So there's another one on top of that, Ron.
Wow, that's crazy.
And if you think that's the end of it, you'd be wrong. The Fortress Investment Group, and I think I've gotten to the top of the heap here, but I'm not sure yet, is owned by Japan's SoftBank Group Corporation, which I've mentioned to you before, Ron, I believe on this show, only in passing, though. And when I looked up my old alma mater, the main daily I worked at in my news career, when I was in the conventional media, the South Bend, Indiana Tribune, I looked it up a few months back and found out that even that relatively modest daily paper, which may not be daily anymore, I'm not sure, was owned by some kind of financial entity, private equity, and that too led to SoftBank in Japan.
That's crazy, in Japan.
So it goes from the top down, it goes Japan, down to the Fortress Investment Group, down to the New Media Group, down to Gannett, finally to NewsQuest, and then there, NewsQuest owns major news outlets, a major share of news outlets in both the U.S. and the U.K., and NewsQuest is one of the big three in the U.K. that owns 75% of the papers there, and most of those papers, those are the main papers where the BBC local democracy reporters, tax-funded, will be stationed to help their bottom lines and keep their stock values up, according to the British media journal that's critical of some of this stuff. So this provides a little bit more of a look at the machinations of the mass media cartel, propping up the most monopolistic, most financially influential papers and keeping their stock bottom lines and their stockholders, their shareholders, happy with tax dollars in part, and giving them the lion's share of these tax-funded reporters stationed at these local papers owned by the big three. So you can see what's happening here. And it even gets better. If you look at Fortress, if you go down from SoftBank in Japan and you go down one level down to Fortress, then if you look at Fortress itself and you poke at their resume, the chairman is Peter L. Breyer Jr. He's the chairman and principal of Fortress. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and former Goldman Sachs, and his partner Drew McKnight, Fortress's co-chief executive officer, is also on the CFR and is serving on the board of advisors for the Center for New American Security. Now, the Center for New American Security was formerly led by Victoria Nuland, the very influential part of the Jewish power structure who helped overthrow Ukraine's pro-Russian president in 2014. And she was the former CEO of that think tank, the Center for the New American Security. And that think tank, in turn, gets major funding from defense contractors Northrop Grumman, Boeing, General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin, and Raytheon. Other donors to the Center for North American Center for a New American Security, are Chevron, Amazon, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, the U.S. State Department itself, Facebook, Google, and Microsoft. So if you look at all these entities and the lines that connect, you're looking at the inside of a part of the mass media cartel that holds sway over major parts of the news markets of the U.S. and the U.K. So you can see that none of this comes from the people. The only thing the people are contributing is money to pay local democracy reporters to be stationed at primarily papers owned by the big three in the U.K. And then there's the American connection through NewsQuest that I've already outlined. So you can see, Ron, if this is a typical way that the mass media cartel is structured, it's in bed with defense contractors. It's in bed with banks. It's in bed with the State Department. It's in bed with Google and Microsoft. It's going to be in bed with Pfizer.
This is just crazy. You know, I think fascism is an appropriate term, yes. Government by corporation. And I think this is literally what was kind of turned into. I believe our government has little impact on anything that affects our lives unless they're clamping down on our liberties. But I think these corporate entities are controlling government completely. People are just out. I mean, the average, just the person out here on the street, he has no say about anything. And that's just not the way our government was intended to be. And I think most of these corporations should be busted up and not be. I don't even think they ought to be allowed to be in too many spheres of interest. You know, I'm surprised they haven't thought about the liquor industry. You know, if you know anything, if you've been involved in the liquor industry at all, and alcohol, but what brought on prohibition was brewers, distillers got into every phase of alcohol. They own the breweries. They own the outlets, the retail, and they own the distribution. So, and they would set up these broke down little places to drink at, and they'd hire some guy off the street to be the bartender, and the object was to get everybody as drunk as humanly possible. And so this is what brought on prohibition. And after prohibition, they busted those three things up. If you were a brewer, you could not be a distributor. If you were a distributor, you could not be a brewer or a retailer. If you were a retailer, you couldn't be the other two. So you could never be, you could only be in one aspect of the three involved in alcohol. And I think this is the way they ought to treat a lot of these other corporations. If you're into this, you can't be into that, Jack.
You know, that's an excellent analogy, Ron. That's a very easy way to understand proper antitrust laws. Yes, if you overdo or misread or misconstrue an antitrust law, it might simply be too much regulation of your God-given economic freedom. But if they're done correctly, with the proper objective in mind, and they're not overkill, like you mentioned, that would be excellent. And obviously, just for starters, no media outlet, and they do it all the time, the local affiliates included, should be accepting a single dollar from Big Pharma if they plan on getting on the news part of things, separate from advertising, and simply pushing vaccines. If you're pushing vaccines and you're taking Pfizer money for ads, you are out of bounds.
Right. I think that could be done. I think the communications, commission in this country is just not operational. I don't think it functions, because I believe they could have done a lot of things to prevent the condition we're in, and they could do a lot of things now, but they don't seem to be too interested in it.
Exactly right. I think that's enough said. I wanted to get a few minutes in on the border. You have some insights on this, Ron, things you've seen and things you might want to reiterate, Title VIII in particular. And we'll leave this aside, but I'll just put it out there. Stay tuned at ukcolumn.org, not only for my Monday weekly reports, but for this next installment that I've been citing information from on the media cartel and how they're trying to maintain control of the narrative by saying there's a news desert out there, a news drought, and we've got to fill it, and we're going to fill it with fresh local ideas. And what I'm saying in my series is these fresh local ideas are the same old legacy mass media cartel trying to reconstitute themselves, allegedly. But if you poke at it like I have been today, and like I did in the first article that Ron read from, you see that it's the same old song and dance with a slightly different glaze on it. All you got to do is poke it with your finger and it falls apart.
Well, so, Mark, I want to take just 1 minute, if you'll allow it, to say what I wanted to say about the border thing and this new, the so-called new title, what is it, Title 4? I mean, SB 4. And I'll make it really short. The media, back to the media, has been making this SB 4 look like a brand new law. And all it is simply state and local law enforcement officials being able to exercise immigration law. And believe it or not, that is already in Title VIII. This is federal law already, and I'm going to read a summary of that. It's one little short paragraph, and it says here, I covered this on one of my earlier shows. It says, quote, state and local law enforcement officials have the general power to investigate and arrest violators of federal immigration statutes without prior INS knowledge or approval, as long as they are authorized to do so by state law. There is no, quote, no extant federal limitation, unquote, on this authority. The 1996 immigration control legislation passed by Congress was intended to encourage state and local agencies to participate in the process of enforcing federal immigration laws. And they give a 28. If you go down here, and it says, okay, This was all determined in U.S. versus Antonio Vasquez Alvarez, 176 Federal 3rd, 1294, 1999. This is a done deal. And they're all acting like, oh, this brand new, horrible thing is going to throw the border into complete chaos. That is all BS contrived by the news media and the globalists.
I noticed, Ron, when you read that, it said provided that the state, how did it say that? Provided that the state
authorized. So all the state or like even a city, you have to have the state authorize it. And so that's what's happened in Texas, is the state authorized state law enforcement officials to operate on the border and to arrest and to execute the law, the immigration laws. And here's another twist that the mass media cartel is putting on this. They act like they're going to start what they call profiling and just arresting people all over Texas. That is absurd. They know where these people are swimming across and wading across the river. All they got to do is stand there and get them when they come in. I mean, you don't have to drive all over Texas.
Let me chime in on that part and the other part real quick. Exactly. They keep saying, like the ACLU of Texas, very, very left-wing, they keep saying that, you know, Texas is wanting to arrest or are arresting people accused of entering the country illegally. Okay, if you're standing at the Rio Grande River and they're coming over, they're not a suspect, okay?
That's correct. They're caught in the act. Man, that is called caught in the act.
Yeah, they're not alleged. They're not suspected of. They know they are. See, so the ACLU, in collaboration with the media, and the media will quote them liberally, will pump that up. And if I understand you right, for the state to authorize its role in Title VIII, SB4 would be superfluous because the state was already doing stuff prior to SB4. And if I understand it right, and I hope I'm not wrong about this, you wouldn't need SB4 to do the state's authorization for its part in Title VIII, right? It already exists.
You have made a great observation. That's obvious. What are they even doing with Senate Bill 4 when it's already federal law? All they have to do is authorize the state law enforcement to enforce the law, the federal immigration law. That's a done deal.
Which doesn't require a bill. It simply requires exercising the authority and the assets that are already ready to go.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And now we're going through all this legal harassment when it's already the law.
See this, and I, without looking at every last period and semicolon and letter to this, and just kind of concluding here based on what I know, it's pretty clear, ladies and gentlemen, listening live and on the archive, that this is already set in place. Texas need only flip the switch and say we're going in. We're going to prevent any further entries, illegal entries into the country. We're going to detain those that do get through, and we're going to deport all those that we can. And then the media also, through CBS News, Ron, they came back with another one of their suppositions, their allegations, saying, but Mexico won't accept those that Texas may deport.
Well, who cares? I mean, that's where they came in. That's where they're going out. I don't think there ought to be any, we can't send them back from where they came from. We have to send them back from their point of origin. That's nonsense. If they came in at the Mexican border, that's where they're going back to the Mexico.
Yeah, and granted, I have some serious reservations about Mexico evidently not doing anything, much of anything, to stop people from traversing their entire country only to get to the Texas border and try and cross into the United States there. Mexico doesn't seem to be doing much, if anything, to intervene there. So who are they then to turn around and say, well, we're not going to accept them if you deport them back to us? To me, even though it sounds crude and rude and lewd, I think that we have to cross swords with Mexico there and say, look, you're not in charge of this. You're going to accept them, or your foreign aid is toast tomorrow.
I don't even think you have to go that far. I just say now, well, first of all, yeah, foreign aid, what are we doing giving them anything anyway? If they're such a wonderful country, why aren't they all staying there? Why aren't all these Mexicans staying in Mexico? Mexico is benefiting from this like other countries because they're getting rid of their thick population with such a low down and struggling economy. They're just offloading their people is all they're doing, and they're benefiting from it. But that shouldn't be the way it is. They should have lawful government down there, too. The whole world needs lawful government, and that includes America and Mexico.
Yeah, that even though we're told they tried, the State Department should be doing serious work to get the countries of origin of all these illegal entrants and telling them that this can't go on. Supposedly, Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, went to Central America and tried some of this stuff. But we don't have a fly on the wall there or a bug built into the lamp to listen in. We really don't know how sincere those discussions were or where they went or if anything became of them. So much more could be said, but we're running out of time. But thanks, Ron, for covering for me for the first few minutes of the show. I was stuck in a bit of traffic trying to get back from an important errand. But thanks, listeners, live and on the archive, for listening today on the 20th. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, here for Stop the Presses. And go to UK Column each Monday where I do a weekly report in a TV-like format. And I also have articles and interviews posted on there, mostly where I'm the interviewer and someone else is the interviewee. But Ron also does his Search for Lawful Government here on RBN on Fridays at 4 p.m. for 2 hours, right? Right? Is that right, Ron?
Yes, Mark. And if they want to know more about this immigration law that's already in place, they can go to one of my show archives for 23 February 24. So it was the 23rd of February of this year.
I'm going to listen to it myself because I'm going to be writing an article about this for American Free Press. Also, check out AmericanFreePress.net for lots of good news. We'll see you next time, Ron, and ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned for the next show here on RBN.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.